Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with Dr. Imad Najm, director of Cleveland Clinic's Epilepsy Center at the Cleveland Clinic Neurological Institute, who provided an overview of the upcoming Cleveland Clinic Epilepsy Summit, which takes place September 11th through 15th in Cleveland, Ohio. The neurologist provided clinical insight on the types of educational goals of the meeting, who should attend, and how they align with advances in epilepsy surgery and research. Furthermore, he spoke on some of the challenges with adjusting to changes in neurosurgery, the potential benefits and limitations of gene therapy in treating drug-resistant epilepsy, as well as the future of epilepsy treatment. Let's dive in.
Over the last 5 years, it has been quite difficult to have and to organize big meetings. And at Cleveland Clinic in epilepsy, we've been organizing international epilepsy symposia and summits every other year. Our last meeting was in 2019. So it is, in a way, a long overdue update about the state of epilepsy and epilepsy surgery circa 2024. That's why this meeting is a continuation of the previous meetings. And the last one in 2019 was focused on a specific pathology in epilepsy called focal cortical dysplasia. And that meeting was organized with the new classification proposal in mind, which was published. The new classification was published in 2022 from the International League Against Epilepsy. And I was chairing the task force on that classification.
Well, obviously, it's important that we got some updates and things of that sorts. And I know there's been a lot, you know, going on in epilepsy field and epilepsy surgery specifically over the last couple of years. You know, it's become more safer and obviously more efficacious and things of that sorts, learning more through the research as we've gone along. Dr. Najm, let's talk a little bit about the actual sessions. So, you know, what are some of the notable sessions or unique sessions that clinicians can access at this meeting, and just, you know, give a little bit of an overview of the land and what they can expect?
There are three main topics in this symposium. The first one is the topic of stereo electroencephalography, what we call SEEG, which is methodology to implant electrodes in the brain in those patients in whom epilepsy is very difficult to localize in what we call using non-invasive methods. The second part is an update, an in-depth update about the state of the art in pre-surgical evaluation and surgical management of patients with medically intractable pharmacoresistant epilepsy. And the third part, it is looking forward at what's new in anti-seizure medication and treatment, what's new in genetics and gene therapy, what's new in digital post-processing of the data, and how can artificial intelligence help us as a community in approaching patients with epilepsy in general and patients with medically intractable epilepsy in particular.
I'm also curious from your perspective, you know, you kind of alluded to at the beginning of our conversation that it's been some time since our last symposium and there's sort of been a good amount that's changed. So in your opinion, you know, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen from epilepsy surgery and what we've started to learn more about, what you've seen from the research just in general? So talk a little bit about what you've seen from the change across from your colleagues and just, you know, the field in general.
I think the field of epilepsy, like many fields in medicine, continues to evolve with time. So if I want to reflect a little bit and think about over the last 5 years, what has changed? So first, from the SEEG standpoint, we know much more now about the indications for the SEEG implantation. Who are those patients who can benefit the most? We know much more now about new indications for SEEG. For example, there were some pathologies in the past where we did not implant. Now we are implanting. An example would be periventricular nodular heterotopia. These nodules around the ventricles. They were being implanted like maybe 10, 15 years ago, but over the last 5 to 10 years, there has been new data showing that if you combine the assessment of the patient, combine MRI, PET scan, ictus, SPECT, MEG, and use all of this information to implant the SEEG, the yield of the SEEG in localizing the focus is much higher. Over the last 5 years, maybe 10 years here, we've been using less invasive methodology to ablate or to burn the foci, the focus of the epileptic areas. And for a pathology like periventricular nodular heterotopia or PVN, this pathology you can do in laser, using laser probe, you can do ablation of these ganglia or nuclei. That's very new and it's much less invasive than opening brain and thinking about going to these in deep inside the brain and taking these nodules is not a very safe way. So this is another example of how the new indications of SEEG have been much better selected and much better validated since over the last 10 years, for example. Now, looking at epilepsy surgery continues to evolve. And see, in the same way as SEEG, but in particular, we're becoming less invasive in epilepsy surgery. We're doing more of the ablation, in particular using laser probes. If we figure out a very focal area in the brain, we are doing more of this. And then we are doing more epilepsy surgery without SEEG. For example, cases where we do have a small dysplasia in the depths of a sulcus, what we call depth of sulcus dysplasia. 10 years ago, we used to implant all of these patients with electrodes. Now, we do intraoperative mapping and the surgical resection with almost like previously unheard of outcome of 90%, almost 90% of these patients will become seizure-free. So these are from the surgical standpoint, from the new things, what has happened. I think the more exciting thing that has not been validated yet, but it's going to be hopefully the next 5 to 10 years is going to be more and more used, and hopefully some indications much better outlined and validated will be what we call gene therapy. Genetic therapy is where I think the more exciting part of the epilepsy treatment in general, and in particular, treating these patients with difficult to control seizures.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Najm to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on September 3rd, the European Medicines Agency accepted the marketing authorization application for Prelenia Therapeutics agent pridopidine, a highly selective, potent S1R agonist for the treatment of adults with Huntington's disease. If approved, it could be the first treatment with the ability to impact disease progression in patients with HD and would be available as early as the second half of 2025. On the same day, Sanofi announced top-line data from its Phase 3 Hercules study, with results showing that treatment with investigational tolebrutinib met its primary endpoint of reduction in disability accumulation among patients with non-relapsing secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. Tolebrutinib remains one of many investigational BTK inhibitors still in development for MS, however, is one of the first therapies to show promise in progressive forms of the disease. And finally, on September 4th, the FDA accepted Axsome Therapeutics' resubmitted new drug application for its novel agent AXS-07 as a treatment for acute migraine. The agency gave the oral rapidly observed multi-mechanistic investigational medicine a Prescription Drug User Fee Act action goal date of January 31st, 2025. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Najum.
These are really, really cool emerging concepts that we're seeing. I know we've heard a lot about gene therapies, obviously, and there's still a lot of kind of questions about how we're going to be able to integrate them, but there's a lot of promise, and there's obviously, you know, we've seen it early on so far. Dr. Najum, I'm also curious, from your perspective and from like an educational perspective, is there a major learning curve, in your opinion, to some of the concepts that are being introduced in epilepsy surgery? Just talk a little bit about, you know, the necessary needs of experience and what you see where clinicians may be kind of tripping up and things of that sort. So I'm curious if there is a learning curve or a big learning curve to these sort of things.
Yeah, this is a very good question, Marco. Like everything in life, there is a learning curve. And medicine and epilepsy are no different here. So yes, there is a learning curve, but the learning curve in epilepsy management, in particular, management of difficult to treat epilepsies, is not a personal individual learning curve. It's a group-based learning curve because epilepsy evaluation and epilepsy treatment with any surgical approach we choose requires a multidisciplinary team, but individuals working together and in sync. And I always say that the strength of any program is as good as, strong as our weakest link. We are as strong as our weakest link in any epilepsy program. And you can imagine there would be even a steeper learning curve with a new team of physicians and psychologists, psychiatrists starting a new program than a group of the same type of individuals or same individuals coming to work in a more established place. So experience matters, and group experience is of paramount importance in epilepsy management and treatment.
Dr. Najum, any last thoughts or comments about the summit itself? But, you know, are there anything that I didn't really cover specifically that you feel as though was kind of pertinent to the neurology audience and clinicians themselves that they may need to understand about this upcoming program or symposium, I should say?
I think there are multiple audiences for our symposium. And this is a symposium, it's not a course. And the symposium is where we get the biggest experts in the field and try to reflect on their experience, their research, the literature, and share with us their thoughts about what can we learn from the past to map the future. So if you ask me what would be one single most important thing any person would get from this, they would have a sneak peek on the future of epilepsy treatment, in particular related to surgical indications and alternative additional approaches such as gene therapy and artificial intelligence.
I'm excited. It should be a very, very cool symposium for sure. We love to see these sort of things. Actually, Dr. Najm, one last question that I wanted to kind of pick your brain about. We've talked a lot about gene therapy, and for us, on our perspective of things, we've talked a lot of gene therapy and a lot of other conditions. You know, there's a lot of neuromuscular conditions that have a lot of up-and-coming gene therapies. I mean, gene therapy was obviously kind of popularized because of the spinal muscular atrophy gene therapy that was created a couple of years ago. But from an epilepsy and an epilepsy surgery perspective, you know, what are some of the main barriers, some of the teaching barriers that you kind of see that we're going to have to get over? And just what are some of the hurdles in general from an epilepsy side? Because we often hear from the neuromuscular side of things and even some of the other, you know, even movement disorder side of things. But from an epilepsy side of stuff, where are some of the barriers that we're going to see with gene therapy?
There are two types of barriers. The first one is a knowledge barrier, and second one is treatment barrier. So, what is the knowledge barrier? Knowledge barrier is based on the fact that we cannot do gene therapy unless we identify the genetic mutation or genetic problem. And this has been the problem in every disease. In cancer, they were able to overcome this by having access to tumor tissue every time they do a treatment, and they did genetic sequences, genetic analysis, identified targets for the gene therapy. So that is very important. And in epilepsy, over the last 10 years, we've been able to use the tissue that was resected from patients with epilepsy and to sequence this tissue and to identify more specific mutations, what we call somatic mutations only present in that tissue, to that are now the subject of some of our gene therapy trial design. So the second barrier is, as I meant, it's a technical barrier. And this technical barrier is based on the fact that this brain is different from the muscle. The muscle doesn't have a blood-brain barrier around it or a blood-muscle barrier. It doesn't exist. But around that brain, we do have the big barrier that is by design, designed to, that is assigned, or its main role is to shut down some molecules from crossing to the brain. So that very blood-brain barrier that we have will prevent us from giving intravenous treatment, for example. Unless we find ways to temporarily and hopefully in a regional manner to shut down or disrupt this barrier for 1 or 2 hours. So for this, there are now trials in design that would allow identify the focus in the brain and then use what we call low-intensity focus ultrasound, LIFU, and then to shut down the blood-brain barrier for an hour or so and administer a treatment, antisense oligonucleotides, for example, against a particular gene through the vein. The second barrier is that is based on the blood-brain barrier. So the second option here for us will be to administer the medication or the gene therapy through a probe. Now, this is feasible, and that is there is a trial now ongoing in the United States for gene therapy of mesial temporal lobe epilepsy using a virus vector to administer an antisense against a receptor, which is the kinic acid receptor, in patients with hippocampal sclerosis. So the focal administration of the gene therapy is possible, but it's possible you have to breach that blood-brain barrier through a probe that is there. So The bottom line here, if we are going to have any future and or we are going to continue to improve or transform epilepsy treatment from treating with less or non-specific medication to more specific targeted treatments, we need to understand the genetic mutations and genetic causes of the disease. I think we made major inroads as a proof of concept over the last 10 years, and there is much more to learn. But I'm so optimistic that I tell you, 5 to 10 years from now, if we sit and talk again about epilepsy, where we are, we're going to talk probably the bulk of what we're going to say will be about gene therapy and what is the newest kid on the block rather than, oh, can we do it or not?
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.